From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, President Trump was in Georgia Saturday for a rally in support of the two GOP senatorial candidates, David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler. But prior to his arrival, attorneys for the Trump campaign filed a lawsuit on Friday calling for the court to vacate the presidential election results because of fraud and violation of various state laws. Election attorney Cleta Mitchell will be here in just a moment with more. And speaking of lawsuits, 38 U.S. senators have filed an amicus brief in support of the Kentucky attorney general, who is in a legal showdown with the Kentucky governor over, you guessed it, religious discrimination masked as protections against coronavirus. Oklahoma Senator James Langford, one of those 38, joins us a little later here on Washington Watch. We'll also get some insight on an announcement made from the U.S. Department of Labor today that has been years in the making, three years, to protect religious freedom. Senator Langford's been a part of that. We'll talk about that. Also, over the weekend, the U.S. Supreme Court, via Justice Samuel Alito, moved up the schedule for Pennsylvania officials to respond to a lawsuit, another election lawsuit, by Congressman Mike Kelly, challenging the Keystone State's vote-by-mail law as being unconstitutional. Now, does the action by Justice Alito matter? Some say the timing of this is very important. We'll find out from Pete Hutchison. He is president of Landmark Legal Foundation, which filed the lawsuit. And when you consider the radical social policies of a potential Biden administration with what corporate America has been doing, it may end up being like having Frankenstein marrying Godzilla. Dan Celia is here with the latest proposal by NASDAQ, telling publicly traded businesses that they need to make sure they're sufficiently woke. We'll talk about that here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on conservative parlor, it's at T. Perkins. All right. As I mentioned, the president on Saturday fired up a rally of about over 10,000 people in Georgia. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
As you know, a major issue in this state is voter fraud. It's been a big issue for a long time, but never like this. We sent out tens of thousands, millions and millions of ballots. Nobody knew where they came from, where they are. People were getting two, three, four ballots. They were signing them, sending them in. What a mess.
And, you know, he was there to help the two senatorial candidates that are in an unprecedented runoff. This is unprecedented in what's happening in Georgia, the balance of the United States Senate. Depending on these two Senate seats that just happen to be up at the same time. Rarely happens, but it's happening. Now, the president, that was the reason he was there, but he was also drawing attention to how the left operates. This is something else he had to say while he was there.
The left lies, they cheat, and they steal. They are ruthless, and they are hell-bent on getting power and control by any means necessary. They investigate you, and they prosecute you. The moment you question them, they try and intimidate you. They call you a poor American. You're not a good American. You don't love our country. They don't love our country. They beat you down, shut you up, and make you retreat.
Joining me now to talk about the Trump campaign's lawsuit that was filed in the Peach State on Friday is election law attorney Cleta Mitchell, with more than 40 years of experience in law, politics, and public policy. Hopefully she can help us get to the bottom of this. Cleta, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tony. It's always great to be with you.
All right. A pretty revealing lawsuit that was filed, the information that you have acquired along with others. You know, many saying that where's the evidence? Where's the evidence? Well, it looks like you've presented a lot of evidence.
Yeah, 64-page contest petition accompanied by exhibits and affidavits, nearly 100 affidavits. So it took over 1,000 pages, sworn testimony. These are people who signed affidavits under penalty of perjury. There's nothing in this lawsuit that is not backed up by either a sworn affidavit by an eyewitness as to a violation of the Georgia Election Code or a declaration by an expert who has analyzed the Georgia election and voting records. So every single assertion in this lawsuit is backed up by evidence. So anyone who says, and I will guarantee you that the Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, has not read, he's the number one defendant. We sued, you know, the Trump campaign sued him. And I guarantee you he has not read that petition. He has not read the affidavits of those Georgia citizens. He has not read the analysis of his own data. And you can't read that and not understand that there are well more than the number of votes, illegal votes that are included in the tabulation that are illegal and should be thrown out. And the remedy under Georgia state law is a new election. Of course, the time period is so truncated with regard to a presidential campaign that that's a bit of a difficulty, but we're considering other options. But look, I mean, this election was not valid. Those results are not valid. Whatever anybody says, they are not valid. And the Secretary of State has a lot to answer for, in my opinion.
So, Cleta, what is, at present, what is the difference in vote tallies between Joe Biden and Donald Trump in the state of Georgia?
Well, it does keep changing. Let's remember that part. The Secretary of State says, oh, we've had the first vote and two recounts. It's all the same. No, we've had three different numbers. It's somewhere, it's about 11,600, I think it's 11,672 votes.
So less than 12,000 votes.
It's less than 12,000 votes. Yes, it's one half of 1% of the total number of ballots cast in the election.
All right. So in your filings in court, you have data experts that have provided sworn testimony. Now, this is under penalty of law by if they were to be lying or provide false information. They identify thousands of illegal votes, 2,560 felons, 66,247 underage voters, 2,423 votes from people not registered, 1,043 individuals registered at post office boxes, not validating that they actually have a place and they live there, 4,926 individuals who voted in Georgia after registering in another state, which is illegal, 395 individuals who voted in two states, 15,700 votes from people who moved out of the state before the election, 40,279 people votes of people who moved without registering in their new county, and another 30,000 to 40,000 absentee ballots lacking proper signature matching verifications. Now, I was not really good in math, but that far exceeds 12,000.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's what's so remarkable here is that there are several of these violations that just taken by themselves would be 3 to 4 times the number required to invalidate the election. And we've put it's all in there. So, you know, the thing that is so frustrating is the media and the GOP establishment. The governor has not been willing to call a special session of the legislature to allow the legislature to decide and exercise its constitutional duty to appoint the presidential electors. I don't know why he won't do that. He needs to call a special session simply to reaffirm and put some teeth into the provision to require signature matching on the absentee ballots. That's where a lot of the fraud occurred during the November 3rd election. I don't know why he doesn't want to try to do everything he can to stop his double steal. But, you know, they stole it on November 3rd, and they're going to steal it again in January unless the governor gets some guts.
Now, Cleta, correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like your lawsuit focuses solely on Georgia law and how it was not enforced or upheld during this election.
That's right.
Well, and so this is all about
Right, it's all about Georgia. It's all about Georgia law, and it's necessary to build that record. You know, I'm a volunteer. We have some other volunteers helping because there's just so much that needed to be included. And the goal was to create a public record that demonstrated the extent of the violations and the illegality and the fact that when the legislatures of the legislatures of the states are designated under the U.S. Constitution as being responsible for determining the manner in which presidential electors are appointed. And all the legislatures have created these election codes and let the people have a voice. That's not specified in the Constitution. But when the legislature exercises that authority and says, all right, you got to follow this election code, and then the election is conducted not in keeping with the election code, the legislature should reclaim its constitutional responsibility and choose the presidential electors. That is what the Constitution provides. There's actually no provision to vote for the citizens to vote.
This is an element of the rule of law. I mean, we have rules, we have laws in place to ensure that things function and everybody can agree with the final outcome. So when laws are being violated or ignored, I mean, it should concern everyone. And part of the filing in this particular suit, as I understand it, was showing that this is not just a one-off, that it appears to be a coordinated effort across the country in other states to violate the laws passed by legislatures through the courts using other officials. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. The Democrats and their left-wing allies started in 2019, well before COVID, I might add. Don't forget that H.R. 1, the first bill taken up by Nancy Pelosi when the Democrats won control of the House in 2018, H.R. 1 in January was a massive election bill that would have provided for all of these absentee ballots everywhere in the country, et cetera. And then when COVID came in, but they started suing. Even in 2019, they started filing lawsuits. They filed two suits in Mississippi, two suits in Louisiana, you know, two suits in practically every state, through five suits in North Carolina. And they spent literally hundreds of millions of dollars. Might not surprise you to learn that George Soros funded it. Mark Elias managed it, the whole Russiagate fame. And they filed lawsuits all over the country to get judges to adopt laws, quote-unquote laws or orders, that basically threw out the duly enacted laws of the state legislatures. That's what they did. And the Secretary of State in Georgia, when he was sued by Stacey Abrams and her crowd, instead of fighting them and saying, no, I have no authority, you know, and the judge has no authority to change the law, that's the legislature's responsibility, he ended up settling with them and entered into a consent decree. He wants to be loved by the left. And you and I both know what happens to Republican office holders when they decide that they like to be loved by the media and the left. It's not good for conservatives.
No, and the coronavirus provided the perfect storm, and now all the pieces begin to come together, how there were Democratic governors that just really exaggerated the threat, the scare, the fear, and the media helped them to push a lot of these election changes, not through the legitimate channels of the legislatures, but through the courts.
They couldn't pass it through the legislature. So
that's right.
They did it another way.
Yeah. Cleta, thanks so much for joining us.
Always
great to talk with you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Folks, this is disturbing. We're going to talk some more about this. But coming up next, another lawsuit, 38 U.S. senators joining with the Attorney General of Kentucky, who's lining up against the governor down there over religious freedom. That's next. Don't go away.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
In a recent poll,
it was revealed that only 6% of Americans hold a biblical worldview. This research also indicated that Christianity's teachings on abortion, marriage, and homosexuality are not only misunderstood, but seen as dangerous and subversive. In response to this trend, Family Research Council has released a new set of resources in our Biblical Worldview series. In addition to our full publications, which cover the topics of Christian political engagement, abortion, religious liberty, and human sexuality, FRC now offers helpful summaries of each publication in this series, as well as accompanying prayer guides to help you and your family pray through these important issues. And finally, our popular Biblical Principles for Political Engagement is now available in Spanish. All these resources are free and available at frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold. Welcome back. I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch. Merry Christmas. You know, as we approach the end of what has been a very long and challenging year, we know that there are monumental battles on the horizon in 2021. It doesn't matter who's in the Oval Office. There's going to be battles, maybe more intense, depending on the outcome. But here's the good news. You can partner with FRC to make a difference. When you give anything to FRC before December 31st, your gift will be doubled, and the impact will be doubled through a $1 million matching challenge. So you can keep Washington Watch on the air, FRC strong on Capitol Hill. You can help us defend faith, family, and freedom. Call us. We've got folks standing by to take your call, 800-225-4008. Again, 800-225-4008, or visit TonyPerkins.com. And again, your contribution will be doubled. It'll be matched. So it'll be doubled between now and December 31st. As I mentioned, 38 U.S. senators have filed a brief urging the Supreme Court to reaffirm religious liberty. They're joining with the Attorney General of Kentucky, who's squaring off with the governor of Kentucky, Governor Beshear, who is using the coronavirus once again as a cloak to put the dagger in religious freedom. Joining me now to talk more about this, James Lankford, Senator of Oklahoma, and one of the 38 members of the Senate. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good to be with you again, Tony.
All right, this is we're seeing this happening. I mean, this has been happening for the last 10 months all across the country. But some good developments here where we see the court stepping in, and now we've got senators standing unified in defense of religious freedom. Are you optimistic the court's going to step in here?
I am optimistic on this. The court stepped in just right before Thanksgiving in New York and stated that the governor of New York can't say that bars and bike shops can be open, but churches cannot be open in certain zones. They've done the same thing now to California, to the governor of California, and said, you can't just declare that churches are higher risk than other locations, so I'm going to close them down. So, in fact, the attorney general in California, Javier Becerra, personally engaged in this to try to block churches from meeting, saying in his opinion churches are more high risk because people get together and sing, and if you're singing, that's a higher risk. And then now this situation in Kentucky, where if you're a religious school, you're being blocked out on that. So we're pushing back in that. The court so far in California and New York has pushed back. I'm confident they will in Kentucky as well.
You know, Senator, when I look at this, it is so blatant. In fact, you made reference to this last Supreme Court decision where Gorsuch, Justice Gorsuch, and his opinion, I mean, he basically says as much, that there's no justification for this. This is plain and simple religious discrimination.
It is plain and simple religious discrimination. That's what it made so appalling in California, especially with Javier Becerra stepping out and saying if people sing and gather in places, that's a higher risk to be able to do that. And so it's okay to be able to go to the store. It's okay to be able to go to a bowling alley. It's okay to be able to gather in other places, but just don't gather in worship places because it doesn't meet his preference to be able to do that. It's clearly the issue here in Kentucky as well because the governor very specifically stated that he doesn't want schools to be able to meet, even if they're a religious institution, to be able to meet. That's a preference thing for the governor, but he still allowed other preschools to be open. He still allowed other stores to be open, other businesses to be open. And so, again, you can't just step in and say, even specifically as the governor did in Kentucky, religious institutions have to close because that's the governor's preference. Thankfully, the United States Constitution supersedes the governor, and people of faith, no matter what faith that may be, have the opportunity to be able to live their faith.
Yeah, unfortunately, you now have a court that agrees with the Constitution and will defend it, which is encouraging. You mentioned twice the Attorney General of California, Javier Becerra. And, you know, he is actually being talked about, in fact, not been talked about, the potential Biden administration talking about naming him as Secretary of Health and Human Services. He has a pretty radical record when it comes to issues not only like religious freedom, conscience rights, and life issues. This guy is pretty far out there.
He is extremely far left, actually, and he would be a very serious risk to the life of every young child in America. If they're in the womb, they're at risk with Javier Becerra as the Attorney General of the United States because he will, or in HHS, because he is going to try to push in every way he can to expand abortion in the United States if he were to be in that role. And there's just no question about that. He is one that would try to expand the oversight of government oversight of a private health care insurance, all the things that there's been so much work to be able to protect the rights of people of conscience and people of faith. That's not his preference. And so he has clearly tried to impose his preference on people of faith in California. I have no doubt if he was in HHS, he would try to impose his preference as well there.
So when you look at individuals like Becerra, that brings a really fine focus onto the United States Senate and these two seats that will be decided in Georgia, because that will decide whether or not someone like that will be confirmed to that post.
That is correct. So the seats in Georgia are extremely important because there's an enormous difference between a 50-50 Senate and a 52-48 Senate, just in what legislation is actually taken up, how we handle nominations, what the process will be to be able to go through for judges. All those things will be very, very important. So for the people of Georgia to be able to make that decision, literally the entire country is focused in on what's going to happen in Georgia right now with already early voting that's already occurring, or on January the 5th, the actual election day itself.
Very quickly, Senator Lankford, you've been working with the Department of Labor announcing today a final rule that upholds religious liberty, showing such a contrast between what we're just talking about and what's been happening in the last 4 years.
Yeah, it's a great rule, and the Obama-Biden administration locked down on people of faith that they couldn't partner with government if they're a faith-based institution. This administration has completely flipped that rule and said faith-based groups are treated exactly the same as other groups. There should be no discrimination against them. That's all anyone should ask. Treat everyone the same, whether regardless of faith or not.
And, of course, we can look for an incoming Biden administration to reverse that rule, but it'll take them some time to do that. Senator Lankford, as always, thanks for being with us. Great to talk with you, my friend.
You as well. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you as well. All right. Today's all about lawsuits. The Supreme Court receiving arguments tomorrow from Pennsylvania officials responding to a lawsuit by Congressman Mike Kelly. We'll talk with Pete Hutchinson next here on Washington Watch with Landmark Legal Foundation. Don't go away.
Since the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, Congress and many states have taken various actions to stop taxpayer dollars from funding abortions or the abortion industry. As early as 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde led the effort to ban federal funding for abortions. The Federal Hyde Amendment, named after him, established the principle that abortion is not health care, and therefore taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. Despite these efforts, the abortion industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. In 2019, Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion provider, received $616.8 million in government funds. Family Research Council's newly updated pro-life map tracks how your state has taken action to stop taxpayer funding of abortions. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life. That's frc.org/pro-life maps.
Aw, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I'd definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
Merry Christmas. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. If you'd like to partner with us, anything you contribute to Washington Watch, FRC, between now and December 31st, will be matched. We've got a $1 million matching challenge out there, so give our folks a call. They're standing by to take your phone call, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. Okay, yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court moved up a deadline for Pennsylvania officials to respond to a lawsuit, an appeal from U.S. Congressman Mike Kelly, who has argued Pennsylvania's vote-by-mail law is unconstitutional, and that every mail ballot cast in the state should be rejected. Joining me to talk more about this is the president of Landmark Legal Foundation that is involved in this lawsuit, Pete Hutchison. Pete, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
Well, Pete, some are arguing that this decision by Justice Alito is significant because of the timing. Is that so?
Well, the fact that Justice Alito asked for a response at all is significant. It would have been very easy if he did not think there was any merit in this appeal to simply dismiss it. But inviting or giving a deadline to the Commonwealth to file a response is significant, indeed.
Well, in the timing of it, by moving it up a day, you know, some are suggesting that this new deadline falls on the same day as the safe harbor date, which deals with electoral nomination and confirmation of electors. And so that this gives time for the court to decide something before Pennsylvania makes action on that front.
Well, that's an interesting point, and it's a good one. If they could decide the whole thing tomorrow, I suppose. But the safe harbor provision is not an end-all, be-all. It doesn't mean that Pennsylvania is not going to be able to cast its presidential electors as it is lawfully determined that they should be cast. But it is an important deadline, but it's not, you know, I don't read too much into it, to be honest.
So what is at the heart of the challenge of Congressman Kelly's appeal regarding the state's mail-in ballot law?
Well, now, this is a very significant challenge. This isn't, you know, sort of vague claims of conspiracies and that sort of thing. What this is a constitutional challenge based on the Pennsylvania Constitution that specifies when a person can vote absentee or in a mail situation. The Constitution is very clear. There's very limited situation. But the legislature last year expanded the opportunities for mail-in voting dramatically, and then the state Supreme Court, just ahead of the election, expanded it even further. Both of those actions were unconstitutional under Pennsylvania law. Now, where the federal Supreme Court comes in is under the U.S. Constitution. Legislatures are given exclusive authority to set the rules for choosing presidential electors. But they are limited in how they do that by their state constitutions. And so that's the issue on appeal here. And it's, you know, it's a legitimate challenge, and it's an important one. Because go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Pete, so basically it is they didn't play by the rules that are established in the Constitution.
That's right. They set their own rules. And it's interesting that the state legislature, it's very complicated to amend the Pennsylvania Constitution. And the state legislature initiated that process 2 years ago to allow for some expanded absentee and mail voting. But that process has not been completed. And it's an indication that they understood or understand that what they've done in this legislation allowing mail-in voting for the presidential election was unconstitutional under their own law. So they understood that they were doing something unlawful, and shame on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court for not only allowing them to go forward, but to make it even worse by expanding it further. Unlawful activity that ought to be rejected by the U.S. Supreme Court because it implicates the federal Constitution and the choice of the president.
Now, Pete, very quickly, we're almost out of time, but the Pennsylvania officials are saying, well, Mike Kelly should have done something earlier. He waited until after the election and his favorite candidate, lost.
Well, under their state law, the way they've interpreted it, if he would have tried to do something earlier, they would have thrown it out and said, you're too soon, you're too early. Now they're saying
he didn't
you're
have
too
standing.
Late. That's right.
They would have said that you don't have standing. So he's doing it
That's right.
That he has standing.
That's right.
Well, Pete, thanks so much for. Yeah, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for representing Mike Kelly in this lawsuit.
Okay.
I think it is important. I think it is important that we operate according to the rules. The Constitution is the agreement by which the people agree to be governed, and everybody has to operate within those boundaries. Pete, thanks so much for being with us, folks. Don't go away. On the other side of the break, Dan Celia from Financial Issues joins us. What we see coming when you look at a Biden administration and corporate America that's off the rails when it comes to liberalism. It's like Frankenstein marries Godzilla. That's next. Don't go away.
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus Christ and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has a three-part series titled, Three Ways to Read the Bible. This series shares helpful ways to be encouraged and directed by God's truth by observing the text of the Bible and applying it to your life. There is no better time than now to get to know God through His Word by looking into the Bible to see what it says about itself, God, and humanity. There's no better time than now to begin devoting time to the Lord and to seek out His meaning for you. This blog series is a great primer on opening your eyes and heart to Him through the Bible amid the toils and troubles of today. Check out this helpful resource and learn how to read the Bible with not just your eyes, but with your heart and mind as well. To learn more, visit frcblog.com/ways to read. That's frcblog.com/ways to read.
When President Donald Trump announced his nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, critics were quick to point not to this qualified nominee's record, but rather to her religious affiliations as a reason she ought not be allowed to serve as a Supreme Court justice. In an increasingly secular culture, it is not only the media that views faith as problematic for those appointed to judicial positions. Senators, particularly Democrats, have inappropriately interrogated nominees with comments and lines of questioning spanning theology, congregation membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits, all seemingly with the intent to discredit the nominees. Family Research Council recently released a publication addressing this important issue. To learn more about what the Constitution says about religious tests, visit frc.org/religious tests. That's frc.org/religious tests.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increasing pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/human sexuality.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again, with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. And you know what? I really hate to contradict Bing Crosby. But, you know, it's I'm having a hard time envisioning and really getting into the Christmas spirit in the age of Corona. I mean, I saw Santa Claus in a like a little plastic cage where, you know, he had this plastic all around him where you couldn't get to him because he didn't want to get Corona. And then, of course, everybody's running around with masks. I mean, it's a little hard to get into the Christmas spirit, but I'm doing my best. And by the way, we've got some folks here. They need something to do. They need you to call them. They're waiting there, standing by the phone to take your call. As we move into the end of the year, this is the end of the year. We've got to just begin next year strong so we can defend faith, family, and freedom against all the attacks and keep Washington Watch going on the airwaves of America, because you see how social media and the cable news network all going to the left, choking down the conservative voice. So everything you give between now and December 31st will be matched. We have a $1 million matching challenge. So give our folks a call, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008, or you can go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, as we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, some of the names popping up for consideration by a Biden administration, I mean, far left. Barcera, we just talked about him, Attorney General in California, far left. I think on FRC issues when he was in Congress, he was a former member of Congress, he voted against FRC's position like 127 times. But when you combine that with what we've been seeing in corporate America over really the last, accelerating in the last 5 to 6 years, I mean, this could be, as I said earlier, going into the break, kind of a marriage between Frankenstein and Godzilla when it comes to social issues. Case in point, NASDAQ, they have a proposal with the SEC that would require one board member from every publicly traded company who is from an underrepresented minority. They're being gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, forcing businesses to make what happens in people's bedrooms a part of the boardroom. Join me now to talk more about this, Dan Celia, president and CEO of Financial Issues Stewardship Ministries and nationally syndicated radio and TV host of Financial Issues on more than 660 stations across America. Dan Celia, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be back with you. Thank you for having me on. I wish we weren't talking about what we're going to talk about, but I am glad to be here with you.
Well, I think people need to realize what we're looking at when you have corporate America, and I'll have to say, I believe Donald Trump and his policies have been holding them back. They would have already been there. But when you combine that with the Biden administration, I think people need to be aware of what is around the corner.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Tony. And this is a horrifying thing when the NASDAQ is pushing this. Look, they're not going to have any trouble getting the proposal through because who's going to say no to it? There's nobody that's going to say no to it. They don't want to get clobbered by, they want to be light. They don't care about what their thinking is. This is a classic case of their ideology driving what is right for their company and what is right for America. I mean, it's sad, but it's going to happen. And here's the thing that I don't want your listeners to forget. So don't listen to this and say, it's not a big deal. So it's one board member. It's two board members. It's not a big deal. You know, we don't want to discriminate against anybody. Let them on the board. No. That's not the problem. That's not even the issue. The issue is what they will bring with them. They will influence the company and the board to start supporting financially these agendas. This is going to be a key component. It's like having the president of the United Way on your board. Where do you think? Why do you think he's there? He's there to influence the board for the United Way, or if you have someone from Planned Parenthood, to influence the board. That influence is going to carry a lot of weight. There's going to be your stockholder money, your earnings. You own part of the company, if you own stock in that company, and that money is going to be going to feed this agenda that is going to give them the kind of propaganda money that they're going to need to make sure this gets into every school from kindergarten up, these agendas. It is a much bigger threat than we might think.
Dan Celia, what is the point of having boards of directors? Is it not the, number one, to make sure the business operates according to the law with their, and they return a profit to their stockholders? Don't you want people that know what they're doing when it comes to running a business, being on a board?
Absolutely, because they have one job, make sure the company is bringing value, as you've said, to the board members. That's their job. They want to see the stock price going up, not down. They want to see value, the capitalization of the company growing and building. That's what the boards traditionally have held the CEOs and the CFOs of these companies' feet to the fire if this isn't happening. I'll give you a great example of what a board should do. I said this during the whole Target debacle. We won't get into all the details. Everybody knows a lot of what happened there with Target. I said the next day that board should immediately fire the CEO. Why? Not because of that particular decision, but think about this. The CEO is in charge of a retail store. The CEO's got one thing he has to do: get feet walking down the aisles. That's all. It's all you care about. I got to get feet. I got to get people in the store. You just alienated 2 million shoppers. You ought to be fired because you've lost your focus on what we're about. We're a retail company. We want to sell stuff to people. These are the kinds of things that are, that the boards are turning. They're looking at everything with these ideological blinders on, and they're missing the very essence, the very reason why they exist and why their company exists. And this is, I mean, this is a horrible, horrible thing, because you've got thousands of companies listed on the NASDAQ.
Right.
That are going to have to, some of them are going to be forced to do something that they don't want to do.
Well, my prediction, Dan Celia, I mean, as we see, you know, woke meets Wall Street, is that is there going to be unintended consequences, as there are with all of these type of policies, is that you're going to see 10 years down the road, you're going to see there was corruption on these boards. There was other things that were done because businesses were not operating according to business principles, but according to woke social justice principles. And something's going to suffer. Something's going to suffer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're going to suffer. America's going to suffer. Our economies are going to suffer. And jobs are going to suffer. Big businesses are going to suffer. And that's exactly, you know, part of the plan. The elite of Wall Street thinks that they're really just dumb enough, I'm going to say,
right,
which to believe that they're going to always exist. This is not going to hurt them. It is, and it's going to hurt everybody in America. It's very, very sad. This started, you know, by a guy by the name of Larry Fink, BlackRock. This was his whole idea with this social justice roundtable discussions with corporate America. By the way, he's president of BlackRock, the largest money manager in the world. And, you know, so he's got a lot of clout. So, you know, what Larry wants once done, everybody's going to fall into lockstep.
Just for people to kind of consider the numbers here for a moment, since we're talking about business and NASDAQ, there's about 3,000 companies out there that I think they would fall under this provision. And although there seems like there's a gay, lesbian, or transgender identifying character on every channel or commercial these days, the actual reality is far different. Now, this population, which seems to dominate political and cultural conversations, is actually quite small. In 2018,
yes,
Gallup survey found that LGBT identifying adults made up less than 5% of the country. So you're going to have some of these people serving on multiple boards in order for them to meet these companies to meet the requirements of NASDAQ.
And as you alluded to earlier, there's no possible way they can be qualified.
Yeah,
this is like Hunter Biden serving on the board of an oil company. I mean, you're going to have a whole lot of people that are only qualified to talk about their so-called social justice, agenda. They're not going to be qualified to run a company. It's horrible if you're a stockholder.
And my prediction, Dan Seeley, another prediction here today. I'm into predictions. The media will treat the results of this just like they did Hunter Biden. They will bury it, and we will not know the truth.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. That is exactly what's going to happen. And, you know, we've got, again, this party-run media that is, you know, turning more and more into a propaganda machine. And it's going to be devastating for America. And, you know, 5% to appease 5%.
This is
the will of the minority controlling the majority.
And, folks, this is all the more reason why we have to speak up about these issues. It's why we need alternative, conservative, Christian, trustworthy media sources, because you cannot trust the mainstream media. And I'm including all of the cable networks in there. I'm including Fox. I'm including CNN, MSNBC. They have all bought into the left's agenda. And you've got to make sure you have trustworthy sources. If Washington Watch isn't what you want, go somewhere and find a conservative source. Of course, we bring you the newsmakers themselves, and you can hear it straight from their lips, unfiltered. Dan Celia, I want to move on to basically some economic news. What's happening in the world of jobs? What's happening with the economy? What can we expect in this time of uncertainty?
Well, I think what we can really expect in the short run, the short term, I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of change. I think jobs will pick up as the vaccine comes into effect, whether you believe in all this or not. The vaccine is going to give business sentiment a sense of confidence, and they're going to get back to work again. The question is, how long are they going to work? My biggest concern about the economy is probably 6 to 8 months out, because I think there's going to be a huge wake-up cry from corporate America that's going to say, oh, my word, what have we done? And I think that is going to set in. And I think we'll give the 12 months, first 12 months, somewhat of a pass. But the economy is not going to survive what's going to happen. It's just not. Because I'll just give you an example, Tony. I know that somebody asked me just a little bit ago about why this corona fear is still so persistent after the election. We thought it was going to go away. I said it can't go away. It can't go away for this reason. And this is my prediction. You can take it to the bank. The left cannot allow this thing to pass without taking advantage of this crisis. And Nancy Pelosi will get her wish list of a $4.5 trillion relief bill that is going to complete her wish list, fulfill all the needs of her special interest groups, the lobbyists. It's going to bail out the mismanaged cities that have been mismanaged for 50 years, the mismanaged states that have been mismanaged, the pension funds that have been mismanaged and full of corruption. It's going to bail them all out so they can start all over again doing what they have been doing. And that's where the money's going. It's not going to help us. It's not going to help the economy. It's not going to help the taxpayers. But they need to be able to get this $4 trillion deal. And the only way they can do it is to maintain the fear about this coronavirus. And they're going to come to the rescue with this $4 trillion bill. And if we lose Georgia, they're going to pull it off fairly easily.
Right. And that will only be more of a ball and chain around our economy in the months and years ahead with that type of debt mounting so rapidly. Dan Celia, out of time. I want to thank you, as always, for joining us. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate being on. I appreciate what you do. Thank you so much. All right.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Yep. Merry Christmas to you. God bless.
Folks, all the more reason we need to be praying and working. If you live in Georgia, I think you should know you need to be voting. This is an important election. By the way, speaking of Georgia, I'm going to be there next Tuesday night. We're going to be up in Cleveland, Georgia. Pray, Vote, Stand rally. I got a lot of folks invited. Todd Starnes going to be there. Mike Huckabee. The two senators have been invited. So I'll have more for you about that. Visit PrayVoteStand.org. We'll have some information up there. Also, folks still standing by to take your call, 800-225-4008. Until next time, you know what to do. Keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.